Dor came back down the carriage toward them. She was smiling. "The Earl's agreed to help us," she said. "Come on. He's meeting us in the library." Richard was almost proud of the way he didn't say, "What library?" or point out that you couldn't put a library on a train. Instead, he followed Dor toward the Earl's empty throne, and round the back of it, and through the connecting door behind it, and into the library. It was a huge stone room, with a high wooden ceiling. Each wall was covered with shelves. Each shelf was laden with objects. There were books, yes, but the shelves were filled with a host of other things. Tennis rackets, hockey sticks, umbrellas, a spade, a notebook computer, a wooden leg, several mugs, dozens of shoes, pairs of binoculars, a small log, six glove puppets, a lava lamp, various CDs, records, LPs, 45s and 78s, cassette tapes and 8 tracks, dice, toy cars, assorted pairs of dentures, watches, flashlights, 4 garden gnomes of assorted sizes, 2 fishing, one of them mooning, the last smoking a cigar, piles of newspapers, magazines, grimoires, 3-legged stools, a box of cigars, a plastic nodding head Alsatian, socks. The room was a tiny empire of lost property. "This is his real domain," muttered Hunter. "Things lost, things forgotten." There were windows set in the stone wall. Through them, Richard could see the rattling darkness and the passing lights of the underground tunnels. The Earl was sitting on the floor with his legs splayed, patting the wolfhound and scratching it underneath the chin. The jester stood beside him, looking embarrassed. The Earl clambered to his feet when he saw them, his forehead creased.
"Ah, there you are. Now there was a reason I asked you here. It'll come to me."
He tugged at his red-grey beard, a tiny gesture from such a huge man. "The Angel Islington, Your Grace," said Dor politely.
"Oh, yes. Your father had a lot of ideas, you know. Ask me about them. I don't trust change. I sent him to Islington."
He stopped, blinked his one eye.
"Did I tell you this already?"
"Yes, Your Grace. And how can we get to Islington?" He nodded as if she had said something profound.
"Only once by the quick way. After that you have to go the long way down. Dangerous," Dor said patiently.
"And the quick way is?"
"Oh, no, no. I need to be an opener to use it. Only good for Portico's family."
He rested a huge hand on her shoulder. Then his hand slid up to her cheek.
"Better off staying here with me. Keep an old man warm at night, eh?"
He leered at her and touched her tangle of hair with his old fingers. Hunter took a step toward Dor. Dor gestured with her hand. "No, not yet." Dor looked up at the Earl and said, "Your Grace, I am Portico's oldest daughter. How do I get to the Angel Islington?" Richard found himself amazed that Dor was able to keep her temper in the face of the Earl's obviously losing battle with temporal drift. The Earl winked his single eye in a solemn blink, an old hawk, his head tipped on one side. Then he took his hand from her hair.
So you are, Portico's daughter. How is your dear father? Keeping well, I hope. Fine man, good man."
"How do we get to the Angel Islington?" said Dor, but there was a tremble in her voice.
Oh, I use the Angelus, of course."
Richard found himself imagining the Earl, 60, 80, 500 years ago, a mighty warrior, a cunning strategist, a great lover of women, a fine friend, a terrifying foe. There was still the wreckage of that man in there somewhere. That was what made him so terrible and so sad. The Earl fumbled on the shelves, moving pens and pipes and pea shooters, little gargoyles and dead leaves. Then, like an aged cat stumbling on a mouse, he seized a small, rolled-up scroll and handed it to the girl.
"Here you go, lassie," said the Earl. "All in here, and I suppose we'd better drop you off where you need to go."
"You'll drop us off?" asked Richard. "In a train?" The Earl looked around for the source of the sound, focused on Richard, and smiled enormously.
"Oh, think nothing of it," he boomed. "Anything for Portico's daughter."
Dor clutched the scroll tightly, triumphantly. Richard could feel the train beginning to slow, and he and Dor and Hunter were led out of the stone room and back into the carriage. Richard peered out at the platform as they slowed down.
"Excuse me, what station is this?" he asked.
The train had stopped, facing one of the station signs. "British Museum," it said. Somehow, this was an oddity too many. He could accept the Mind the Gap thing, and the Earl's Court, and even the strange library. But damn it, like all Londoners, he knew his tube map, and this was going too far.
"There isn't a British Museum station," said Richard, firmly.
"There isn't," boomed the Earl. Then you must be very careful as you get off the train."
And he guffawed delightedly and tapped his jester on the shoulder.
"Hear that, truly? I am as funny as you are."
The jester smiled as bleak a smile as ever was seen.
"My sides are splitting, my ribs are cracking, and my mirth is positively uncontainable, Your Grace," he said.
The doors hissed open. Dor smiled up at the Earl. "Thank you," she said.
"Off, off,"
said the vast old man, shooing Dor and Richard and Hunter out of the warm, smoky carriage onto the empty platform. And then the doors closed, and the train moved away, and Richard found himself staring at a sign which, no matter how many times he blinked, nor even if he looked away from it and looked back suddenly to take it by surprise, still obstinately persisted in saying, "British Museum."